Good day, good people. I am Brother Robert Farrell, and welcome to Contemplative Inner Being's Wisdom Wednesday. Wisdom Wednesday is recorded live on Crowdcast, and we invite all of the podcast and YouTube listeners to join us live on any Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central here on Crowdcast. That way you can become part of the conversation that happens after our reflective time. And whether you are here for the live session or you are enjoying the recording, thank you for being part of Wisdom Wednesday. Friends, Wisdom Wednesday is an invitation to open to the depths of yourself, because wisdom isn't knowing more, it is knowing with more of you. Yes, this invitation is so that you have an opportunity to open to the ground of wisdom, which is transformation of the human heart and the human consciousness. Tonight we're going to encounter three brief wisdom contemplations, and each one's going to be followed by a minute or so of silence, where you are invited to the spiritual practice of resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Resonate. Does something connect with you? It might be symbolized by a word or a phrase that you hear. Reflect, to ponder deeply, to meditate with images and thoughts. Respond. You can respond in all kinds of ways, such as journaling or prayer or body movement. And rest. Simply be silent and open to the presence and action of divine love in your life. After those three contemplations, we will share a spiritual practice, and then we'll enter into a time of conversation and dialogue. Tonight's theme is a contemplative heart. So with an open heart, with a calm, centered presence, a gentle position, an alert mind, and a gentle breath, we begin. Friends, learning to dance the cosmic dance is one way of expressing the heart's conviction concerning our need to recognize and move with the divinity manifested in the rhythms of the day-by-day life that we are living. There is a dance of being awake and being asleep, of being alone and being with others. It is a dance of being seen and understood, and not seen and understood at all. There is a dance of being happy and being sad. There's a dance of feeling so happy you think you're finally beginning to understand the spiritual dimension, and then this part where you don't think you ever will. The dance of being confused and having clarity, going back and forth. And if we were to set it to music, we would say that God is the infinity of the rhythms of our life, and God waits for you to find her there. Friends, God is the infinity of the very rhythms of your day, breathing in, breathing out, being awake, being asleep, standing up and sitting down. It is like God forever comes to visit, but we are rarely at home. We are probably out buying a spiritual book or getting in an argument with somebody about God. So we are always trying to step into this rhythm. How can you learn to move with the God-given, godly nature of the unfolding rhythms of your life and your passage through time from birth to death? And friends, without warning, we find ourselves falling into the abyss of a star-strewn sky or find our heart impaled by a child's laughter or the unexpected appearance of the beloved's face. And without warning, we lose our footing in the silence broken and in the breaking deepened by the splash of a frog we did not know was there. What is so extraordinary about such movements is that nothing beyond the ordinary is present. Nothing beyond the ordinary is present. It is just the primal stuff of life that has unexpectedly broken through the mesh of opinions and concerns that all too often hold us in their spell. And here, in this unforeseen defenselessness, is granted the contemplative experience, however obscure it might be, that we are the cosmic dance of God, that the present moment, just the way it is already, in its deepest actuality, the fullness of union with God that we seek. Sometimes what happens is that although the moment has passed, you reflect back upon it, and you realize that the subtle moment was a kind of homecoming. You settled with a sense like, I belong here. When you start understanding your life in the light of these moments, you realize this feeling that you're skimming over the surface of the depths of your own life. It is all the more unfortunate because God's unexplainable oneness with us is hidden in the depths over which we are skimming. And then there's the gift of a holy discontent. A holy discontent. I don't like living exiled from the inner riches that from time to time visits me and quickens me from within. I want to abide in the depths so fleetingly glimpsed. So, as we begin to enter into the silence, how can we embrace and align ourselves with the ever-present rhythms of life? Let us take time to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Yeshua tells us to always be ready, to be awake, to be fully conscious and expectant. It is the key to all spirituality because we usually aren't. Christ is always coming. God is always present. It's we who are not. most of us just repeat the same routines every day, and we are upset if there are any interruptions to our patterns. Yet God is invariably and ironically found in the interruptions. Because God has to catch us literally off guard. And so the great task of religion is to keep us fully awake, alert, conscious. Because when we are present, that's when we will know the presence. It is that simple and it is that hard. In the Garden of Gethsemane, the last words Yeshua spoke to his apostles were, "Stay awake." And staying awake comes not from willpower, but from a wholehearted surrender to the moment just as it is. If we can be present, we will experience what most of us mean by God. And friends, we cannot get there by any method whatsoever. We can only be there. The purest form of spirituality is to find God in what is right in front of us. And Rumi echoes Yeshua, "Because the breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you, don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep." People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Friends, contemplative life, it flows in a circular pattern where awe provokes introspection, which invokes awe. Maybe you're making dinner and you step outside to snip some chives from the kitchen garden just as the harvest moon is rising over the eastern slopes. She is full and golden, like one of those pregnant women who radiates from within. Suddenly, you cannot bear the beauty. And this is not the first time you have disappeared into something beautiful, because you have lost yourself in heartbreak, then lost the desire to ever regain yourself. Then lost your fear of death. You long ago relinquished your need for cosmic order and personal control, and you welcome unknowingness. Which is why seemingly ordinary moments like moonrises and lovemaking undo you. The veil has been pulled back. And everything feels inexhaustibly holy. You have glimpsed the face of the divine where you least expected it. And this is why you cultivate contemplative practice. Because the more that you intentionally turn inward, the more available the sacred becomes. And when you sit in silence and you turn your gaze toward the holy mystery, the one that you once called God, the mystery follows you back out into the world. So you sit down to meditate, not only because it helps you to find rest in the arms of the formless beloved, but also because it increases your chances of being stunned by beauty when you get back up. And in the midst of a world that is begging you to distract yourself, this is no easy practice. Yet, You keep showing up. You are indomitable. You are thirsty for wonder. So friends, how does this concept of staying awake and fully conscious relate to your ability to experience the divine and find God in everyday moments? So we sit down to meditate, to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Well, friends, a contemplative practice is any act habitually entered into with your whole heart. It's a way of awakening, deepening, and sustaining a contemplative experience of that inherent holiness of the present moment. At any given time, we are likely to have not a single practice, but rather we have a constellation of practices, often with one of them as our primary practice. Now, others may surround it, each carrying its own special place in our life. As the months and years go by, the constellation changes. New practices emerge. Practices that have been present for years fall out of the picture. And we discover by experience that if we are faithful to our contemplative practices, our practices faithfully lead us in the direction of a more daily abiding awareness of the divinity of the life that we are living. An abiding awareness of the divinity of the life we are living. And remaining faithful to our contemplative practices, that calls for the integrity of remaining faithful to a commitment that nobody sees. It consists of being ourselves and of giving ourselves over with our heart to simple acts, which on the surface seem to be the incidental passage of time. Slowly, almost imperceptibly at first, fidelity to our contemplative practice evolves into a habitual awareness that does not miss the surprise appearance of God. Finding your contemplative practice is then an event that occurs in each and every granting of contemplative experience in which the divinity of the present moment is realized. Realize the divinity of the present moment. And without your knowing, you are led along the path of your transformation into the depths of divinity that your daily living manifest. And through our renewed fidelity to contemplative practices, we learn to discern and take steps to correct any tendencies that we have to drag around dust-gathering trophies of things past. We know by experience that in a relative, but in a very real sense, we are the arbiters of our journey, that we must take responsibility to cooperate with the grace of being faithful to our contemplative practices. If we do not patiently work through the obstacles occurred along the way, we can lose our way and lose ourselves in the process. And each time we give ourselves over to our contemplative practices, whatever they may be, we find ourselves once again one with the communal mystery in which there is no separate self. Thus, a commitment to contemplative living is synonymous with a heightened awareness of and a response to the real suffering of real people. Contemplative experience and self-transformation can and should be arenas of heightened, compassionate sensitivity to the real needs of those around us. It is not navel-gazing. Compassionate love is always ready to drain the fear-based rigidity out of the situation to the point that we begin to recognize our ever-present invitation to join in the general dance of God, one with us in our brokenness. And the dance never ceases to stir within us, beating in our very blood, whether we want it to or not. The dance is deathless, it's childlike and free. It's an infinite presence, wholly poured out in and as the concrete immediacy of who we simply are. How does maintaining fidelity to contemplative practices contribute to an increased awareness of the suffering of others and a compassionate response in your life? Take a breath, friends, as we enter into the silence to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Our spiritual practice this week comes from Esther DeWall and Thomas Merton. And it is a contemplative practice, of course. Contemplative photography. I thought I would share with you a practice that's kind of out of the realm of sacred piety, you know, the sitting on cushions and the praying of words. Now, many of you know Thomas Merton was, of course, a writer and a teacher and a poet, but he was also a photographer. And it is from his photographs that we learn much about how he saw the world and how he prayed. And the two are, of course, intimately connected. And he handled a camera as an artist would and used it as an instrument of delight and perception. Now, it was in the late 1950s when a journalist by the name of John Howard Griffith visited Merton in his hermitage. He had his camera with him, and he let Merton keep it on extended loan. At first, Merton sent him the negatives, and John Howard Griffith was puzzled, for Merton's view was so different from that of most people. Merton photographed whatever crossed his path. A battered fence, a run-down wooden shack, weeds growing between cracks, working gloves thrown down on a stool, a dead root, and a broken stone wall. But Merton, what he was doing was he approached each thing with attention. He never imposed. He allowed each thing to communicate itself to him in its own terms. And he gave it its own voice. Later on, when he was out in the woods with a younger friend, Ron Seitz, both with their cameras, Merton reprimanded him severely for the speed with which he approached things. He told him to stop looking and to begin seeing. Because looking means that you already have something in mind for your eye to find. You set out in search of your desired object and have closed off everything else presenting itself along the way. But seeing, that's being open and receptive to what comes to the eye. And so he used his camera primarily as a contemplative instrument. He captured the play of light and dark, the ambience, the inner life. And above all, he struggled towards an expression of silence through the visual image, so that his photographs show us that ultimately his concern was to communicate the essence of silence. So maybe this week, as your spiritual practice, you get your candle out and see if you can start seeing. Well, friends, it's at this point that we say goodnight to our YouTube and podcast listeners and invite them to join us any Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Central. And we close with our reminder that love is the way, and that you, yes, you, you are love. So stay awesome and be love, and we hope to see you again soon. Good night and blessings to all.